All right. Welcome everybody to week five. As I wrote, we are now changing gears a little bit in the sense that we will now focus more on projects and less on exercises. So we're not going to do exercises anymore. We're going to discuss projects in the exercises. We might once in a while do a little other, but doing projects will be the dominant part. And for the afternoon, I will, after we have Mads here talking, I will once again go through the small project and submitting solutions. And if you have questions, and then also discuss final project and groups and whatnot. I have written out to those of you who are not in group, and please send me a mail of what the status is. And yeah, then without further ado, let us introduce and welcome Mads Christensen, formerly NBI, now NVIDIA Denmark, and he will talk about GPU accelerated data analysis with Python or in Python. And I guess, yeah, you're a go, Mads.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'll be talking about accelerating data science on GPUs and also scaling to multiple machines and multiple machines with GPUs. And as Troel said, I'm now former professor, assistant professor at NBI, but now I'm working at NVIDIA. I've done that for a year now. And my primary work has been on this framework called RAPIDS. And that's primarily what I'm going to talk about today. So first off, why accelerating? And you probably have seen this similar graph before. Oh, well, 1 second, can you see this red dot?
Yeah, we see the point of line.
Perfect.
And by the way, if people have questions, just write them in the chat and we'll take them either by voice or writing.
Yeah, cool. So on the left, we have a graph showing over time the Moore's law, so the number of transistors on the chip. And that has gone very well. So we are doubling every 2 years. The number of transistors on a chip is doubling. So that's great, and meaning we have a lot of power on a lot of compute power on a chip. But as you also can see, so this is the blue line. On this middle line here, you'll see the clock frequency. So this is the speed of a single core, you can see. And around the time of 2005, maybe a bit before, the clock frequency didn't really increase. And I think Pentium 4 is probably where it peaked for Intel. And from there, we still have many more transistors, but the speed of a single core is not increased. And so in order for software development for us to utilize the whole machine, we need to parallelize and try to utilize more cores in order to get full performance. And I will get into that back, but also CPUs has using a lot of space, a lot of transistors to try to guess what the user wants. The final one here is the power consumption, which has been more or less constant as well. Now the problem, of course, is that the data is growing, right? So if we in the field of data analytics and data science, we will need to handle more data over time. And that's not following the same core, trend as the clock frequency. And so in order to really be able to handle this increased data load, we need to parallelize, both accelerating on one machine, because one machine now will have many, many cores and many, many transistors, but also between multiple machines. Yeah, so this is the main motivation to do acceleration, I would say. And yeah, so we can scale up. So this grid here, you're scaling up, meaning on one machine going to use accelerators such as GPUs, but also this could also be multiple multi-core CPUs or FPGAs or other hardware. And then you can go scale out, meaning to multiple machines, going over the networks to distribute and compute on many machines. And then up here we have, of course, the combination, so accelerating on multiple machines. This up here is the most difficult part, right? And I will start talking about scaling up, because that's probably the first thing you're gonna do. If you have a workflow of data science and you say, oh, I'll need to speed this process up, probably the easiest way to do that is to buy a graphic cards or maybe multiple core machines and then run it on that. Yes. So why is GPUs interesting at all? Going back to the architecture of CPUs versus GPUs. So a CPU is a general processing unit, meaning that it has to handle everything from the kernel, the operating system, to the actual scientific calculations. And as I mentioned before, we have a lot of transistors on our CPU, but because people are very good at programming in parallel, and because operating systems is primarily running on sequential, or at least the logic of it, most of the hardware on a CPU is dedicated to control logic and cache. So if you look at a die on a CPU, you would see that most of the logic, most of the transistors are dedicated to control, meaning branch prediction, trying to predict how the programmer branches. So if you have a for loop or some if statements, it's try to figure out what will happen next. So it can prefetch those instructions that it expect you to take, so the branches you expect you to take, but also memory prefetching, trying to predict what memory is coming up next. A lot of stuff is happening here in control logic. And also a lot of transistors are allocated as cache. The principle here is saying if you access some memory before, you're probably going to access it again. And then up here we have the ALUs, the components that actually does the computations. With the more transistors on a die, we usually also have multiple cores. As in this case, we have four cores. Each core can do some calculations as a single thread, or maybe two threads per core. Depends on the specific architecture, and you also have hyper-threading. But the idea is that you're running more or less one or two or three, maybe four threads per core. On the GPU, that's a whole other story, because GPUs are historically, they've been developed for graphic cards, right? It's a graphical processing unit. And graphics is much more special, right? It's a special domain. It's very domain specific. Traditionally, you have a scene. You want to render that scene that consists of a lot of pixels generated. And you can do this scene generation and rendering. You can do that parallel. And so the hardware has been parallel from the start. And so you can see here that you have a lot of ALUs, so most of the die is dedicated to do computations. Then you have some control logic, but not much, which means that there is no smart memory prefetcher, there is no branch prediction. If, as a programmer, you do some inconsistent branching, it will just hurt a lot and will perform very bad. If on a CPU, you often have some turbo modes, so that if only one thread is running, it will get overclocked and run faster. On a GPU, if you only have one thread, it will run very, very slow, because only one 100 or 1,000th part of the DB will be used. And similarly, it doesn't have that much cache, so it expects you to access the memory in the correct way so that you don't need cache to amortize memory accesses. It has a lot of memory, but this memory is not the over here on the CPU. It's the basically main memory, which is RAM. On a GPU, it has its own RAM that is then connected to the CPU. But the takeaway here is that traditionally GPUs, because of history, is just dedicated to accelerate calculations and nothing else. Everything else is just, you know, up to the programmer to fix. You just have to program this unit correctly, otherwise you get horrible performance. But if you do, you have a lot of transistors dedicated to do calculations. One big problem in talking data science is how, and wanting to utilize GPUs is memory transfers. So this is just breaking down a typical workflow. So I don't know if for Windows, but there is a very popular framework called Hadoop for data science, and it's based on reading from disk, doing some querying, meaning loading data in, extracting the data you need. Then you write, and that's one program that does that. And then you write it back to a file system, and then you read again the file system to load a new program that extract, transform, and load data. So this is where you convert your data to the correct format, extract what exactly you need, do small transformations so that it fits the final program, the machine learning training, and again, the interface here is the file system. So you read, do some work, one program, write, then you read again, do some program, and write, and so forth. And then a breakthrough, or at least a significant speed up, was provided by this project called Spark that can do this all this in memory. And so you get a one or two orders of magnitude speed up just by, instead of going through the file system, you can keep it on in main memory. But this is all CPUs. So traditionally, if you were going to use GPUs, you had to have the same problem. You read from disk, but then you'd also read into GPU and do the one, the first program, the first querying. Then write it back, again, read it in, and run another program, and so forth. And you usually use typical speed up compared to using CPUs, but it's not idle, right? So you're really using a lot of time copying back and forth. And that was the first thing NVIDIA was working on, saying, can we eliminate this this memory transfer? So here again, so you have application A, you load the data in to GPU, then you have to convert it and copy it to the CPU in order to make it available for another application, and then you go back to GPU and to the other stage. And RAPIDS, the first job for RAPIDS was to eliminate this extra copying, which turns out to be a lot of work, because now you need all these different libraries, and you imagine there's quite a lot of libraries, right? You might know pandas, but there are many libraries you can combine to create your machine learning or data science workflow. And all of these have to support the same data format be able to grab data from basic data pointers from another library where all of it is locally on memory. All of it is locally on GPU. But if you do, you can get up to two orders of magnitude just by keeping everything on the GPUs. The central point in RAPIDS is called QDF, so basically CUDA data frame, and that it's basically pandas on GPU. And I saw that you have used pandas in this class, so I hope this is somewhere familiar. The observation is that it's a bit unintuitive. You might think, okay, if I'm doing data science, most of the time is spent on my actually running the machine learning algorithms. And if you look at optimizations and libraries, this is where most of the work is going into. Optimize the training, the inference, all the how to run the algorithm as fast as possible. But on an average data science spends most of the time preparing data, extracting, figuring out what values you are. So for instance, here, you see you download your data, you configure your workflow to handle it, and powered on a CPU, and particularly if you're running on a single CPU, a single core, it takes forever. You drink a lot of coffee, and then you might end up finding, there was some null value, some unspecified string, and then you have to go back and handle that, and you might forget a feature in your workflow and start over. And the idea in GPU is to say, okay, if we can accelerate this part of the work for data science, it can be really helpful, because a data scientist can then fairly easily get to a point where he finds out that, I forgot a feature, or there are some data I need to convert in order to run my model. So we want to accelerate the whole workflow, not just the specific machine learning algorithm. Of course, that's also important, but that's usually something that's running while you are not looking at the computer, right? So if you set up a job and it runs overnight, if it takes 5 or 6 hours, it doesn't, or maybe 5 or 8 hours, doesn't really matter that much. But preparing data, if that takes 10 hours or 5 hours instead of 10 hours, then it's really, really useful. QDF is built on Python, so it basically tries to be to have the same API, the same interface as Pandas. So it should be very easy to use if you are familiar with Pandas. So it's built on Python, and then I use Cython to interact with an underlying C++ library, also called QDF, which is then in turn running or calling these CPU libraries, CUDA libraries, that are the kernels that are submitted to the graphic card and runs on the graphic card. But as a user, you don't have to worry about it. You can just stay up in Python land, and you don't have to worry about GPUs at all. You might even know that you're running on GPUs. So QDF, the C++ library, is the backbone and has more or less the same features as Pandas, but it's not as flexible because it's C++, so it's easier for the compiler and to make optimized code, but you sacrifice some flexibility that you have in Python. So you have the Python layer that tries to transform the operations into this C++ and use this as C++ library to get very good performance. There's maybe a little bit. Let me see. Okay, yeah. So you can run it, as I said, you can run it as a in Python, and you can do stuff like read CSV files directly. You can copy the data frame into Pandas, and then you get a regular Pandas data frame. You can create data frames directly from Py, from NumPy, from Pandas, PyArrow, QDF. There's many interoperabilities with other libraries. Yeah, and you can even compile your user-defined functions in Numba and have those run on the GPU. So if you really have a very time-consuming kernel, you can actually do this manually. But that's not something you hopefully don't have to do as a regular user. And then speed up can be drastic. Running, this is comparing a single GPU, but a very fast one, a Tesla V100, versus a CPU running on single threads. So this is a fairly slow CPU, I would say. But the numbers are also very impressive. So you have this merge, sort, and group by, the three most used operations and data frame operations when preparing to run your datasets on machine learning algorithm. And you can get up to, in the best case, almost three order of magnitude speed up, right? So maybe almost 1,000 times speed up compared to running on CPU. Given it's a slow CPU, but still it's very fast, and you should be able to see significant speed up running on a GPU. Yeah.
There was a question.
Yeah.
What does ETL stand for?
Extract, transform, and load. It's an acronym used in data science. Basically, it's the part where you do before. Say you do a k-means, for instance. Then you prepare the data, extract it somehow, make sure that it has the data types that you expect, right? If it's strings, you might say, let's convert it to integers or vice versa or something like that. And then you can start your training algorithm.
Okay, and another question is, how would this compare to an i5 CPU?
If running on an i5 on a single core, that I would expect that to be faster. Let's say twice as fast, right? I don't know.
Okay. Exactly. Right? But, no, just order of
magnitude. But again, so and in that case, you would probably not get 500 speed up. You might only get 200 speed up or something like that. But I would expect you to get at least 100 times speed up.
Yeah, so. That's cool. Factor two.
Yeah. String support, something I really haven't thought about, but that's of course very important also in data science. So there was in the media, there's been a lot of time accelerating code doing string operations, and it also shows that it is very much faster than running pandas. So ETL is now done. We have the data is prepared to what we want. The next step is doing the algorithm, training your if it's neural network or whatever it is. And RabbitTest is called QML, which is a scikit-learn library. And I don't know if you have seen scikit-learn, but it's basically a Python library for that has a many of these typical machine learning algorithms.
By now.
Say again?
I would be surprised if not most students have seen that.
Oh yeah, cool. And QML supports many of these operations, so you can do the classification, inference, clustering, decomposition, dimensionality reduction. You probably can recognize some of these algorithms. And it should work just out of the box. So for instance, if we have we want to do some clustering using scikit-learn datasets to make some moons, so basically all the data points here. And I can do that using scikit-learn. And if I just wanted to run a regular pandas CPU based running on a CPU, what I could do is I could transform it into a data frame, doing something like this, and then taking this data frame into a algorithm. This is a clustering. I can't remember what it stands for. Doesn't matter. But a common clustering algorithm, and you can just fit the data to this data frame, and you get the result. Right. Now, if you want to use a GPU, the only thing we have to do is swap pandas with QDF, right? Nothing else has changed here. And swap scikit-learn with QML. And now everything is, so first off it's generated on the CPU because this is scikit-learn dataset, but then it's loaded into the GPU, and from there it will run on the GPU handled by QML and predict the same stuff, hopefully the same result. So if you're developing, you can start developing in your regular Python, scikit-learn, pandas tools, and then if you find out you need some performance, better performance, you can try swapping out the libraries. And of course, not everything is supported. And you know, there might be some specific operations not supported in QML or QDF, but there is a lot, right? And NVIDIA is dedicating many man hours to develop all of these, support all of these operations. And doing this on, again, it's a V100 versus, and now it's versus, I think it's paralyzed between 40 cores, CPU cores. We can see significant speed up again. I won't go too much into the specifics.
Okay, I'm getting a lot of questions here, and I think people should have a chance to ask in themselves. Michael, will you start?
I was just wondering if, for example, you have a very large data set and you want to run your machine learning algorithms. Most of that probably won't fit on the GPU memory. So is there any way to is there a data loader built into QDF, or do you have to do that yourself?
Yeah, there is a data loader, and both, if you're reading directly from disk, say HDF5 format or something like that, Parquet format, it supports that out of the box. And so you can just read the files, and it will lazily read the data from disk it needs. And it also supports spilling, so it can, so if you have an algorithm running on a GPU, it can spill some of the some of the data not used, you can spill that to disk or to main memory automatically.
All right, cool, Michael. And then regarding operating system, we assume this is for Linux only, right?
Yes, I think also Mac.
Ah, okay. But that was perhaps the question. Not for Windows, but...
It's definitely not for Windows, but I think it's also Mac. Quite sure of it. But I think the overall all support in Rapids is primarily Linux. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
But I will show you have some Docker images you can use, which makes it possible to fairly easy to get going and also run on Macs.
And Sven asks if the QML syntax is exactly the same as scikit-learn or similar, or
it's similar. It's not exactly the same. There might be other, so the function name are the same, and the parameters are usually the same, but there might be some specific GPU parameters.
Okay, so 90% probably the same. Yeah.
So it's probably the syntax is probably the same. It's more or less the same. What biggest Achilles heel is probably if you have a function you like or you use in scikit-learn that is not supported in QML. I mean, that's probably the biggest problem you could have, right?
Windows is out.
Windows is out, yeah.
Yeah, and then Jana had a question. Can you say what is a container?
Yeah, so I'll get back to the container. It's I'll get back to that. Oh yeah, so some other numbers going through some common operations in the scikit-learn, and we have space speed up going from up to 120 times here to 4 times, 5 times. So that was scaling. That was scaling up using GPUs. Another way to do it is going scaling out, meaning between multiple machines. And for that, we used something called Desk, which is not part of Rapids, but something Rapids use a lot. I will get back to that. But all of these libraries are open source on GitHub. But Desk is also an open source project, and it's basically meant to parallelize and distribute data, regular NumPy code, scikit-learn, pandas, and it it's kind of cool. So the idea is that it uses the primitives, it used the underlying libraries as primitives. So it used NumPy, Pandas, Scikit-learn, all these libraries as primitives, so that it doesn't have to implement those operations, but only handle the parallelism and data distribution. It can scale to a thousand of nodes, and it's fairly easy to get started using a single laptop, and then you know do your debugging and development, and then you can scale up, and it supports common high performance computing schedulers, Kubernetes, and you know, even support Hadoop. So for instance, if you have a NumPy application, like just a very small sample here, instead of importing NumPy, you import Dask Array, and then you can do more or less the same operations. And it will basically create a data array or Dask Array that consists of many individual NumPy arrays. And each individual NumPy array can be located on different machines. This is where the distribution comes in. So Dask is only handling coordinating these NumPy arrays. And the same goes for Pandas. So instead of using Pandas, you can import Dask data frame, and then you can do this more or less the same operations. And those operations again will be going from, you do the operation on the Dask data frame, and then that's delegated down to Pandas data frames located on each machine. So for instance, in Scikit-learn, if you have a random forest and you want to fit some data, it has a nice feature where you can define, in Scikit-learn, you can define a parallel backend. And one of the backend support is Dask. So, you know, just by adding these two lines, Scikit-learn will use Dask to distribute and parallelize this operation. And in this case, it's fairly easy because the random forest is it's embarrassing parallel to run. And similarly, if you just have a Python application here, a general Python application, you can define these delayed objects. So in Dask, you can say, I have this function if and I have a function g. I wrap them in a delayed object so that operations on if and g, when those functions are called, they are not really happening. That doesn't really happen anything. So down here, when if is called, nothing is really happening. What happens is that Dask will record this operation and say, "Oh, at some point, we can call if to produce result." And again, down here, when calling g, Dask will record this operation and say, "Okay, if we need result at some point, we need to call g." And then only down here, when we say we really want. You really want the result of results in this case. This computation Dask will generate a graph representing your program and then distribute tasks into different workers or different machines and then run the graph in parallel. And so the overall goal in Dask is basically you have a user and you have some hardware, parallel hardware. And Dask will automatically, not completely automatically. If you use Pandas or NumPy or Scikit-learn, it's almost completely automatic. But you can also define your own custom code that generates these graphs, which in turn are executed on some potentially a supercomputer, but also your own workstation or something like that. The cool thing about Pandas is that the cool thing about Dask is that you get much parallelization for free, but you can always go in if you have some problem that's not performing very well, or maybe implementation doesn't exist. You can always implement your own version and submit that.
Okay, Asker, will you please ask your question?
Sure. I was just wondering, I heard somewhere that even a gradient boosted decision tree can be parallelized at least partially. And I was wondering, is that something like if you were using XGBoost or LightGBM, is that something that you straight out of the box without having to do any sort of fiddling with it would be able to get to work with that?
So I don't know if there exists as a direct function call you basically can call and then get it distributed with Dask. So I don't know if that exists, but if it's fairly easy to divide the application or the problem into to sub problems that you can run individually, then it's fairly trivial to use Dask. But it's a good question because that's also the drawback of Dask. If you have a traditional high performance computing problem, very tightly coupled. Say you're running a PDE, so partial differential equation, some finite difference code or finite element, or some other traditional physics code. Dask is not the tool. This is where usually we would use MPI or some other more traditional high performance computing libraries. Dask is more very much suited for machine learning because often in machine learning the problems are, you have dependencies, but it's fairly easy to, in most cases, to break it up into smaller parts, running different training sets or some other ways to divide your data and run those in batches. And this is where Dask is very, very well suited.
Which is why cross-validation, for example, would be something obvious for this.
Exactly.
You know, that's embarrassingly parallelizable.
Exactly.
Cool.
And then the final challenge is to combine scaling out and scaling up. This final one where we combine Dask and Rapids. And that's why we chose Dask, because it's very easy to swap the underlying API, or the underlying library. So for instance, a Dask array which usually consists of NumPy arrays underneath. If you want to use GPUs, we can just swap it with GPU arrays. We use something called QPy, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, now this is a GPU array that has the same API as NumPy, and so it works the same way. Dask really doesn't know that it's running on GPUs. For Dask, it doesn't really matter. As long as the primitive, the underlying library, supports the regular array operations. Similarly, with data frames, usually it's pandas underneath Dask data frame, but we can just swap it out with QDF and it works the same way because QDF has the same API as pandas. And then some end-to-end benchmarks. So this is comparing up to, I believe this is Amazon's, or it's Asia's, doesn't matter. It's some CPU nodes on, I think it's Amazon cluster, versus a DTX2, which is a very fast GPU server with 16 GPUs and 5 DTX1s. And as you can see, it's performing very well, GPUs in general. And I won't go too much into detail with the specific numbers because they change all the time, but you need a very large CPU cluster to compare or to compete with GPUs. So it's definitely something that's, NVIDIA is doing very well in this segment.
But even, looking at it in the middle plot, even the DGX2 or 5 DGX1s, which, one of the things we run on is that it's 150 times faster.
Yeah.
Be considered as, compared to one.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
All right, that's something.
So yeah, it is. It's I think it's a bit of coincidence that NVIDIA stumbled on this machine learning. So initially, historically, CUDA was developed, the NVIDIA's general computation library was developed to do some extra computations, and I think mostly targeting high performance computing, traditional PDEs, physics code. And then came along machine learning, and turns out because machine learning is just a lot easier to parallelize generally, GPUs became very popular. And you know, have these pipelines that, you know, instead of in graphics where you calculate one, you can calculate each pixel individually. Now you just have each data point in data science and run those operations individually. That's why it's usually very efficient.
Pretty lucky to start up a project that wasn't aiming at machine learning, but then hitting these machine learning.
Yeah, yeah. NVIDIA was lucky a lot, also because this was around 2010, I think, I would say. That's before my time in NVIDIA, where they introduced CUDA in 2009 when I started my PhD. And people are like, who's going to use that? Because it's much more difficult to program, and you know. But NVIDIA just kept insisting on improving and support this new API. And then came along machine learning and also crypto, so bitcoins and stuff that turns out to be very efficient on GPUs as well. Yes, but finally, if you want to try this out, as I said, everything is open source. NVIDIA is earning its money on hardware, so all of the stuff I'm doing, developing, and my coworkers, it's all open source, and it's on GitHub. It's under this Rapids AI, and there you can go in and check out and submit issues if you have any, or maybe even contribute with the pull requests. And it also have a fairly nice installation guide, and you can, so basically you can choose, you can use either Conda, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but this is a Python library installer thing.
So also pretty commonly used, yeah.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's fairly common use, and so we support that. So you can see Conda install Rapids, and then you get all the new packages.
And then you say that, and then Sophus is writing that you can't use pip install.
True. So pip install. Yeah, you need Conda install.
Conda environment.
I guess at some point pip install will be supported. But the problem with pip is that if you are distributing, if your libraries consist of C++ or C code, or just native binary codes, it's get very complicated to support pip. You can do it, but it's much more difficult, where Conda supports this natively, all these binary packages.
I didn't know that was the underlying.
Is the underlying problem. It's in pip. If you have a pure Python library, pip is the best. But if you have some C code or Cython code or something like that, then it's just get complicated.
But I thought libraries were written, or at least in the end, written and compiled in C++, and then you know is a good fast library, which means.
yeah, you did it. Anyway, we also have this Docker. And Docker image is it's nothing to do with the Rapids at all, but it's basically a virtual machine, stripped down virtual machine that you can run on your Mac or on your Linux, and I guess also Windows. I don't know. Maybe not. But at least Mac and then Linux. And it has all the libraries in this image here. It has all the libraries needed to run Rapids, all the Rapids packages. But I won't get into detail how to do that. But it's called Docker, and it's quite common use to get going. And it's the cool thing is it supports GPUs, right? It can access your native GPUs.
Okay, native because
because it's not really a virtual machine. It's just binding. It's a binding layer. It's running on the underlying kernel. It's more technical, so it has access to and better performance than if you have running a virtual machine. If you run VMware or a virtual box.
Perhaps the thing to say is that means that as most machines actually have a GPU that is just used for graphics, it's using the one on your computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's something.
Yeah. But I would suggest that if you have Conda and Linux or Mac, I would probably use that. But I'm not now right now. Let's wait a second. So
yeah,
the supported here is Linux, so there's no Mac here. But I'm quite sure that you can run a Docker on Mac.
Okay, but it doesn't run on Windows. A lot of people, if you see the chat, are trying it right now. I think, Michael, your question is pretty good. Could you ask? We can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the docs and I was wondering if you're, for example, for the big project, if you're doing anything with images. I can't find anything where you can load in images to the GPU or to from the GPU directly with QDF. So for example, if you want to run an image through a neural network, it seems like you have to do it on the CPU and then use Conda use CDF after you've already loaded it. So for example, you'll need to create a Panda data frame and then convert that to a QDF data frame.
Oh yeah, but you should be able to run to load images directly, because that in that case it's not QDF, right? Because QDF is more targeting data frames. So that's this database type stuff. If you want to directly load images, you should look at I think it's called CU Spatial, I think. So I can see this on this easy install thing here. There is also a page called CU Spatial, which is for images, and you have also Signal and Graph and stuff. So okay. I believe you can. You should use this package instead of QDF.
Okay.
I think I have one more slide. Oh yeah, this is just. We also have, so we have the Rapids in GitHub, and you can also go into Medium and Rapids AI, and there are some guides to do different stuff. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much, Mass. I think we should all start by unmuting and clapping at the Mass. Please join me. Thank you very much. And then I think we simply go with questions yeah, well, a lot of them were answered on the way, but I'm sure there are a few more around. Please, everybody, you can just speak up. All right, then I will start. We agree that essentially all laptops, modern day laptops, have a GPU on board.
Yeah.
Which means that you can actually make a setup where you run it on your own.
Yeah, but the only thing is it has to be NVIDIA graphic cards. So that's a caveat. So there was this, initially NVIDIA invented this CUDA, which is this interface general programming of GPUs, and then AMD wanted to get in on it, and so they have has this library called OpenCL, probably heard of, that both NVIDIA and AMD support. But then I think NVIDIA thought they had so many, much more, commercial reasons to neglect the OpenCL and then only support NVIDIA's own CUDA, and trying to kind of compete with AMD. So at this point, I think if you're doing data science and Python, you probably need NVIDIA. And I think even if you just work with regular C++ code, it doesn't really matter. I think AMD has almost gave up on this market.
Okay. Sorry, Carl. I see you have an AMD card. What's the? I have no feeling for which computers have an NVIDIA card in them typically.
So laptops traditionally, if you have a dedicated, so that's the thing, right? So most laptops, many laptops, have onboard GPU. Most Intel processors CPUs has a embedded GPU in it, and so in that case it wouldn't work, right? So you need a I think it's they call it discrete GPUs on your laptop.
Discrete GPUs.
Yeah, I think that's a marketing term they use to distinguish against embedded. So that's, and then I don't know how many. If you have a gaming laptop, of course it must have a dedicated graphic card, but if just your work laptop, it might not have. And now NVIDIA just announced, was it Thursday, that you can now buy a rack for $200,000 with 5 petaflops. So what used to be something you needed a supercomputer for, you can now buy a rack, basically.
And 200,000 Danish crowns or dollars?
Dollars.
Okay.
Or maybe that was, dollars. Or was it, I might not be the whole rack, it might only be a single, what was it called, Ampere. Doesn't matter, I can't remember. They're traditional new architecture, but
Okay. Aske, will you please ask?
My question was if using Dask has any merit if you only run something on one GPU. Like, does it also handle parallelization inside the GPU, or is it only between when you have several GPUs? Is that where the use case is?
Yeah, so the use case is multiple GPUs. So the parallelism within a GPU, that's handled by QDF or QML or these libraries. The parallelism inside the GPU is so fine-grained that that's not something you can have in a Python library. That's way too inefficient. But you can use Dask on a single machine on multiple, if you want to use multiple CPUs cores. So that's a use case for running on a single machine. And I encourage you to also use Dask to just use CPU problems, because your laptop might not have a GPU, but it definitely have multiple CPUs, right, or multiple CPU cores. And so you can run Dask using that.
Hello.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if the graphics card okay, so when you render an image, you have real-time rendering and then you have pre-rendering, right? So and the GPU, is it more used for the real-time or the pre-render?
What do you mean by pre-render?
Oh, so like when you are building a 3D model in 3D Max or something, then you can render an image in a renderer like V-Ray, or you can use Unreal Engine to render it in real-time.
Mm. I see. So that's a good question. So GPUs traditionally in the old days, GPUs could only render real time. And so if you were in 3D Studio Max or some of the other Blender or whatever, it will actually render on the CPU. And it might use some OpenGL instructions, but primarily it will be in the CPU. But that interface NVIDIA introduced in 2009 called CUDA, that actually enables general software to use this the GPU for general purpose applications. And so you can render on the GPUs. Similarly, most, if you have games might use the GPU to render graphic, but also to use to calculate physics or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
So now it both, right? So now it can render it both render, yeah, runtime and pre-processing.
Okay, awesome. Do you think I should wait until the RTX 360 releases, or should I buy the RTX 2060 now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Specific question.
You should. I don't know. You should probably wait. I don't know. If you can wait to the end of this year, then. But I mean, it's always good to wait, right?
I mean, I probably should buy both. It's good one for NVIDIA, right?
Yeah.
I can just for information. I looked up if MacBooks, and they typically have both an integrated and a non-integrated GPU on them.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So maybe I should Google Rapids and Max.
I just had a little follow-up question. So if you have an integrated and a dedicated GPU, like, of course, there is quite a significant performance difference in those two graphics cards, but would there still be like a significant gain in using desk to parallelize between those two GPUs? Or is it more like more of a hassle than the speed bump?
I think it will be more of a hassle. And also remember that the embedded GPU is probably not NVIDIA. I would guess that's probably Intel's embedded. So you would need to use OpenCL, and then that's not supported in desk. So.
It looks like the Macs use AMD.
Ah, okay.
Can I ask one more unrelated question?
Sure.
So I saw recently the new Unreal Engine 5 demo. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay. I was just very impressed with the graphics over there. Like, looked very real. And I was wondering... if the GPU, I mean, how can it run the GPU? It seems like a big leap in technology.
Yeah, so this is more of a conversion for NVIDIA, but NVIDIA is using data science, machine learning specifically too. I don't know about the demo you're talking about, but at least that's a new feature is upscaling graphics. So basically you can render a scene on low resolution, so 560 or maybe 720, and then have use machine learning to upscale that graphics to full HD, so 1080p, without any performance. So that doesn't cost you anything because you're using some other tensor cores on the GPU. But because you're running it in so low resolution, you should get a significant bump in frame per second, which could be translated into better graphics. That's something new that's very exciting for NVIDIA, because they can do better performance and keeping the same graphics.
Oh yeah, cool. Also, that's all. I thank you for reminding me of this, because Yeah, I saw the video about the NVIDIA using deep learning to train the graphics cards to upscale the graphics. Like they deep learned on a 6K image or something. But I'm wondering, how does it work from the machine learning perspective? Because you have like, you can have an infinite number of different scenes where you need to render. So how do you set up the machine learning in order to learn all of that? Like,
I mean, so that's a traditional machine learning. So the gist of it is that you, as you said, you're rendering very, very high definition scenes, and then initially you just did it on some specific game, right? So you just have some very simple games, and then you're rendering very high definition. Then you train on that. Then you have another game running on a lower resolution, and then you have a very good cost model because you can see, okay, how different is the very, very high resolution image versus my generated low resolution. And then you have a machine, a supercomputer, to train on this data set and train and train and train on many, many different games, primarily shooters or stuff like that, right? You know, it's not the chess or something, it's action games. And then the deep learning, the neural network will learn to upscale correctly. Right? It turns out to work very well, and that's probably because it's probably the most straightforward problem for neural networks, so deep learning, because it's very, very easy to define a nice cost function that takes the whole problem into perspective, right? Because you have the correct image and the low resolution image, right?
So does it transform the whole image in like a 1D array, or does it like work on a 2D array?
I don't know exactly how to do it. I would guess 2D array and use some convolution, but that's just my, I don't know the exact details.
All right. We now I think we've asked Mesh a lot of things. We're getting into the details. So I think we should thank you for now. I hope, Mass, that it's okay if we drop one or two mails following up if people have specific questions.
No worries.
But otherwise, we just thank you for your time and for your knowledge. It's good to see into, well, if not the future, then at least now.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.